We talked really well. We've been doing meditation. We've been talking about the relationship between the word, the nama, and the rupa, the word and the image, the word and its content, and how related they are, even if the word is the word for an emotion, because that emotion, whether it be happiness or sadness or whatever the emotion is, that emotion, that word is really directly connected with the emotion or with any type of rupa, with any type of form. Form stands for the meaning, the knowledge. So the word evokes the object. In fact, the name for an object is padartha. Padartha means the artha, the meaning of the word. So the pada is the word, the padartha is the meaning of the word. So the pada and the padartha are very much connected. The word evokes the image immediately. It's not nothing you can do about it. Unless the word has no meaning for you, then there's just ajnanam. Then the word evokes ajnanam. It's just a sound. But if it's a word, a pada, it invokes the padartha. Now, this is a wonderful thing. There are many, many languages. Just in human species, there are many different languages. But no matter what language, say all of the different words for happiness, for instance, in all of the different languages, the words are different. So the pada is different. But the padartha is the same. In other words, happiness is happiness. Maybe if the words have a little different connotations, like some languages have more words for happiness or more words for sorrow, then it will evoke different, you know, subtilities of that particular word. But the word, no matter what the language, invokes the padartha, the meaning of the word. Now, as studies have been done, this is true even for, in terms of, just say language, human languages. But we are finding that plants and trees, especially, have the hidden life of trees. There's some beautiful books out on trees and on animals. They have their own language, and the language means something. Like for animals, for instance, the language is not, there are various calls, like for birds, there's various calls, but for dogs, there's a lot of, it's all embodied. The way that they respond to each other, it's all in meaning, how they wag their tail, how they lay down, how they turn over, all of these things. It's an embodied language, but it's a language, nevertheless. And so you have to think about how all beings communicate. All beings communicate through their language, even trees. They communicate through their language. We may not understand their language, like we don't understand. I don't understand Italian. I have to learn it now that we're here. I have to learn some Italian. I don't understand Italian. But what's so interesting to understand, and then just think of this in terms of all creatures, all languages, that the padartha is the same. The pada, because there's many different languages, is going to be different. But what the language is invoking is the same. Say we have the word tree in many different languages, or animals in many different languages, it will always invoke that image. And so even in terms of emotion, the language will invoke the emotion, the emotion will invoke the language. They're very highly related. And what I'm saying here is that the languages may differ, but they don't differ in terms of the padartha, what they're invoking. See what I mean? And so there's, on different levels, communication going on all of the time. You know, even people who are think of themselves as having different types of psychic capacities. Often those psychic capacities, I think this psychic stuff. I'm not talking about woo-woo stuff. I'm trying to bring it back into the normal level of reality, not this kind of, I don't know, whatever it is. Just bring it back into the normal level of human relationship, or the relationship that we have between all beings. There is a common language that we're not, it's always happening, but this common language, the language of the psyche that's always invoked on the subtle level by the words that we use, whether it's tree language or mosquito language or whatever the language happens to be, that subtle sukshma sharira, that subtle body, the subtle realm is always invoked, right, along with the, what we call the physical expression, the vak. When we talk about vak means speech. Speech is in this dimension, but there's a subtle speech going on which is in the form of images and also affect. So there's a lot of implications around this. Just to make you see what I mean, just to experience this in your own mind, just, I'm going to say a sentence. You say that sentence and then see if you can just recognize the subtle image that's going along with the physical words. So if I say, you know, I'm going to go on a walk up into the mountains today, you know, those words have a padartha, they have a meaning. So we're used, like if I say tree in your mind, you know, a tree comes, the image of tree. But when you say a sentence also, I'm going to go for a walk today up into the mountains, that is happening in your, that vision of going for a walk today up into the mountains is taking place. You see what I mean? It takes place. You don't have to ask it to take place. It is simply taking place. And so in our communications with each other, especially just between humans, that the image is taking place in the psyche, in the mind. It has to. There's no, you can't stop that from happening. Now, normally the image that is taking place, if that, what we call this quality called arjavam. Arjavam is one of the qualities for antakarna shuddhi. It means there's, it's like a straight, it's straightforward. What they mean by there's a straightforwardness between your mind, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, your words, and your speech and your action. There's a straight line there. So when we talk about this quality, arjavam, we say it like this, we go backwards, you know. What you do should be true to what you say, right? And then what you say should be true to what you are thinking or feeling. And so that's a straight line. Like, what if you, what you do is not true to what you say, and then what you say is not true to what you think? That is very confusing. And it's a type of a lie, we can say lie on different levels. It's very, very confusing, though, psychically. You know, because your feeling, what you say, is not matching what you think or what you feel. You can feel many things, many, many things, but you don't say all the things that you feel. That's fine. You don't say all the things you feel. Right? And there's no conflict there. But if the things you say are different than what you feel, right, or the things you do are different than what you say, you know, there's a conflict there. It's confusing. And so now think about it like this. There's this inner reality that's going on, and then there's this external reality that's taking place also. In the vyavahara, in this empirical, because I'm making a statement. But that statement is not matching what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking. Yeah. Like I say, oh, you're such a beautiful, wonderful person, and I sit inside and thinking, you are such a jerk. But I'm being appropriate. So there's going to be these words that lose their meaning. They lose their meaning. They lose the tejas completely. And it causes a great confusion in your psyche, because there's one thing, the feeling, the image that's happening in a subtle level, and then what's being said here, and the two don't match. And so there's a lack of resonance. When that arjivam is there, that natural resonance is there, and what you say is what you feel, what you do, then people can fully be with you, can fully respond. But if what you feel or what you think is different than what you say, you know, and what you say is different than what you do, then people may not know what you're really thinking, but they're also very uncomfortable. There's, because the real communication is taking place on a more subtle level. You know, like there's this one statement that the union analyst I worked, he had a beautiful book, and I have to look it up. I still haven't done it for years, look this up. But there's somebody who made this beautiful quote, you know, it goes something like this, your feelings are so loud I can't hear what you're saying. And so to have that arjivam, you know, and to kind of realize that your words are invoking a reality, but then the words can also be giving what we call mithyajnanam, where the words really are not holding what they're supposed to hold. So everything gets jumbled and confused. Okay. But when the image which the word naturally evokes, right, is what you're actually communicating and saying, then those feelings, those images are beautifully communicated, really. You can think like this, be aware of this, to all beings. Not just to human beings, to all beings. Because it's this level that is that is kind of the communication of all psyches. As long as someone's living has a sukshma sharira, you know, there's communication going on. They easily communicate with each other because they have the same language. Like if we speak English, it's easy for us to communicate with each other, though maybe not as true in such a true way as we would like. But if it's a different language, then there's a sensitivity that you need to have kind of be able to really be communicating with the trees, or communicating with the grass, or communicating with your animals. You see what I mean? And so, even communicating with yourself, you know, where there's a deep resonance. And so this has, even in our daily life, it's a beautiful thing to start becoming aware of this fact that it's not just people who are psychic that are kind of aware of this level. We're all aware of it. It's there all of the time for everybody in equal measure. It's not like somebody has more of that and another person doesn't. That's like saying, well, some people have a psyche and other people don't. Mm-hmm. No. We all have that, but we might not be focused, be recognizing the reality of that. And the reality is, you know, your feelings are so loud I can't really understand or know what you're talking about, because that resonance isn't there. So it's really kind of broadens your depth and your communication to be aware of that. It's the same thing in the psyche, the relationship between the word and the image, you know. The word invokes its padartha. And so in meditation, one meditation that Swamiji has used, I think it's a beautiful meditation, has to do, I'm going to guide you on this meditation now. It has to do with allowing your body and your facial expression to be the same as your Ishtadevata, or, for instance, in the temple, if you know the Dakshinamurti or Jnaneshwari, if there's some image of a Devata or a Murti at the temple, they all have a very particular expression on their face that is Vedic. This expression is Vedic down to the finest millimeter in terms of the type of smile, the type of expression of the eyes. In fact, the eyes are the last, when they are making the Murti, the eyes are the very last thing that they do, because once the eyes are done, then, you know, there's that, it gives that life, so to speak. But the expression, the bodily expression, the expression of the face and the cheeks and all of these things are all very detailed in their description. And when you look at a Murti, like say if you see the Dakshinamurti at the Kwalator Temple or also at Salisbury, they're all expressions, usually if they're in the temple, of the Devata, of the deity, meditating. That means they're just meditating, being with themselves. Right? So this expression that you see is the nama. The expression is the nama. And what it invokes is the rupa. Is the that particular expression invokes the ananda or the nature of yourself. So sometimes when we do a meditation, we take on that form. So I'm going to do a little guided meditation for you, but I kind of want you to understand what's going on there and why it's so amazing. Why it's so powerful. So, okay. So, Om Tat Sat. So let yourself get in a meditative position that is comfortable for you. Just try to keep your spine in a comfortably straight line so that your head is able to rest upon your spine and the neck is able to relax. And just suggest to your body to relax. Let the word relax invoke the meaning of the word relaxation. It will automatically do that. Let your shoulders relax. Any part that is tense, let that go to that area, let that relax. Just feel your body relaxing. Your head and your face relaxing. Now what I'm going to do is really something I learned directly from Swamiji. Kind of open your eyelids and then let them close very gently, so that the eyelids are not creased. They're as though fully extended, not in any stressful way, but there's no squinting or wrinkling of the eyelids. They're fully extended, relaxed, and very gently resting on your eye, on the lower lid. Just spend a moment. You may have to open and gently shut your lids a few times, just notice how open. It's as though your eyes, or on the eyes, are so open, the eyelids so smooth, gently resting on the lower lids. Just notice, take a moment to notice the effects of that. So if you can visualize a murti in the temple, like the Dakshinamurti, how relaxed the eyelids are, how without creases, without any tension. You can feel that relaxation extending up and around. Your whole forehead is affected by that. From the sides of your eyes, the temples underneath the eyes. And then become aware of your tongue, your mouth inside. And let your tongue relax, not being pressed down or up, just naturally relaxed and as though suspended, effortlessly suspended, totally relaxed. And in that relaxation of the tongue, feel the mouth and all around the cheeks and chin, and the bottom half of the face really relaxing just by the relaxation of your tongue. And continue to feel your body relaxing as your face letting go of its tension as the tongue remains relaxed, the eyelids as though open, letting your creases gently resting. Now let your lips, mouth, form a gentle half smile. You can see that very gentle half smile on the mouth of the murtis that you see. Just take on that smile. And just Notice the subtle change in disposition. Just focus. It's actually quite a natural focus brought about by this form of the Murti. Gently focus on your own presence, the awareful being, the awareness, the me, the very nature of your being. Continuing to relax, gently focusing on your own presence. If there are any thoughts or emotions starting to waft through, just welcome them, allow them to come and go. Presenting themselves to you, but you remain the same. as your mind wanders, go back to that physical expression of the gentle smile, the relaxed tongue, the relaxed eyelids. Just gently, not really worrying about your mind, just letting it be, but keep coming back to that physical expression. Gently focusing on your own presence. Shut. Shut.
Shanti, shanti.
This is something we'll be circling around, bringing this back. But if you can spend time on your own, kind of working with this relationship, you know, it's very interesting. There's a lot of implications, like, for instance, if your mind is upset about something, for instance, the face will take on the image that matches that, just naturally. But what is so amazing is that you can change your face. Mm-hmm. And as you change your face, there's a change or a breaking of that thing that is being, that emotion that's being held in place. You like kind of locked in there by your body, by your facial expression, by your posture, everything. So just getting used to that relationship, I think, is so helpful to help us break certain dispositions that we find ourselves trapped in, you know, and also knowing how to just invoke through your own body and your own expression that meditative disposition in the psyche. You have to work with it a little bit to see how what a beautiful thing it is to know.
At some point today, I think we could have a little meeting.